I am delighted to introduce to you a lady that I've known virtually, I guess is the right adjective, for some time now. I followed her work. I read her blog. She's written a couple of books prior to this one. She has a new book out called Snap Selling. As I understand it, it is a bestseller on Amazon, and I can't wait to learn more about this book and talk to this delightful lady. Welcome to the show, Jill Conrath.
Hey, Stone. Thank you for having me today.
Well, we are delighted to have you. What an exciting time this is to get a chance to review this book. Tell us a little bit about this book. And I guess one of the first questions I have right out of the box, what compelled you to write another book and write another book now?
What compels me to always write is when I run into sales challenges that I'm not capable of dealing with adequately. And what happens to me at that point when I encounter these challenges is I actually stop and say, whoa, I don't get this. Something new is happening. And then I study it and I try to figure out what works. And that's what happened to me when I wrote Selling to Big Companies, which is really a book all about how to crack into new accounts. And what happened in the last couple of years that has been impacting sales, and really what I've seen has been a major trend, is the fact that people are so crazy busy right now, and every attempt to sell to them is in many cases is rebuffed because they're just too busy to handle and deal with all the things that are on their plate.
Well, one of the things
that's what compelled me to write.
That sounds like a good reason to put out a new book. One of the things that struck me right off the bat was a subtitle, Speed Up Sales and Win More Business with Today's Frazzled Customers. Of course, so, you know, here at the High Velocity Radio Show, we have a tremendous affinity for this whole idea of speed, increasing the ratio of results to time invested. But talk to us a little bit more about this this challenge that I think we're all beginning to continuing to see in working with and trying to serve the frazzled customer.
Yeah, in the book I do call it a frazzled customer syndrome because I think that best described what I was seeing out there. The reality of it is when we are under pressure to do more, to do it faster, to, you know, with fewer resources, we become different people. We're not rational and sane decision makers. And I think all of our sales methodology that's out there right now today assumes that this normal human being that has all the time to analyze and study the data and make rational decisions is just sitting at the desk waiting for us to contact them as salespeople. But the reality of it is when you are crazy busy, time is your most precious commodity, and so you protect it at all costs, which means, by the way, that when salespeople are trying to reach you, the decision maker, I'm asking everybody to sit in the role of decision maker right now. When people want your time, when you're crazy busy, you sit with your finger on the delete button when they call you. That's true, though, isn't it?
Yes, that's why I'm laughing. It is true.
Yes. Okay. So you, the decision maker, when you're in the role of the buyer, you sit with your finger on the delete button for the phone messages and the delete button for your email messages. And research shows, by the way, that the average person is taking 2.7 seconds to make a decision on an email message.
Wow.
Before they delete it, decide to continue reading it further, or forward it to somebody else. 2.7 seconds, it's like this little nanosecond that you've got to capture somebody's attention.
That's,
and the same
reading,
thing holds true.
That's reading the subject. That's reading the subject line, 2.7 seconds.
Yeah. I know, it's pretty bad, isn't it? Tells you the importance of the subject line, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does.
I know.
So what are some strategies that you found to help you work through this kind of fray?
Well, it starts, I mean, in the book I talk about the three primary decisions that a customer makes. And the first decision they make is to allow you access. And they make it in these small and tiny increments. And I'll go back and give some specific examples there. But the second decision they make is to change from the status quo, which, by the way, is the hardest decision for them to make because any change requires more time. It means they have to stop and look and analyze what they're doing. They have to, you know, determine if it's going to make a difference for the organization. They have to look at how to get buy-in to change and everything that's affected. So it's a massive step for them. And then the third decision they make is which vendor or supplier to use. And so each decision has its own things. But I think the easiest one to demonstrate this on is at the very front end, the first part of the decision process, which is the allowing access. What I typically see people do is to make some real sales derailing mistakes. And you talked about you like speed up sales. Well, mostly what I see people doing is delaying and derailing sales at the very front end. And they do this by using the gracious message or the nice approach. And they don't want to be seen as product-pushing peddlers or self-serving salespeople. They really want to, show that they're consultative and nice and willing to work with people. And so they leave this message that goes something like this. Hi, Stone, this is Jill Conrath calling. I'm the account executive with Leapfrog Strategies. We specialize in offering a full range of training programs for all your sales needs, all the way from opening doors to closing sales. I would love to come and talk with you about how you're currently handling your needs in the sales training area and to share with you some of the things my company can do. I'd be glad to meet with you at your earliest convenience. And here's my number. Isn't that what you hear most of the time?
Yes, hear and see all the time.
You lost me after 2.7 seconds.
Exactly, because you know what, and I actually do a lot of work on this in workshops just to show people, and I ask them to yell out beep when they or delete when they would delete me. And so I start out my message, I say, hi, this is Jill Conrath, I'm the account executive with XYZ Corporation, and at that point, 50% of the people will delete me because they're too busy to listen. And the remainder will delete me typically after I say, we specialize in offering a full range of services for all your sales training needs, all the way from how to open doors to close sales. By that point, I hardly have anybody listening. And yet that's what every seller is doing right now. It's a throwaway message that they're using thinking they sound nice, but it doesn't meet the criteria that the customer is using to evaluate it if it's worth his or her time.
Now,
and that's
Jill,
what Snap is about, the criteria.
Now, you talk about being nice. Now, we had dinner on Saturday evening with a mutual friend, someone that you know and who speaks very, very highly of you. I will probably butcher the name, but I believe his name is Anthony Iannarino.
Yes, I know Anthony.
Well, you know,
I can't say his last name either.
Yeah, so, okay. Well,
feel any better.
You know who I'm talking about.
But he could not say enough nice things about Jill. I mean, he just went on and on and on.
Right. No, he did. Absolutely. Wow. So he wanted to be sure. He wanted to be sure we said hello. But, he writes about sales as a blood sport. So he kind of talks about
as a
blood sport, as cutthroat. he's out there talking about, he's saying not being nice, but he's obviously coaching you to be a little bit more aggressive. Can you go too far and go the opposite of nice?
I think it depends what you call the opposite of nice. I mean, the opposite of nice for some people might be, unnice. And for me, the opposite of nice is professional. And I think there's a real difference in that. You can be a jerk on the phone, sure, and then, you've crossed the barrier and you're deleted as fast as they can get their hands on the button. But I think that the essence of what we're doing today is that we're needing to sound like a peer who brings high value on the sales call so that it's worth their time. Because if you look at what's going on in people's minds and they're evaluating salespeople every single interaction, the first thing they're saying when you call or send an email is this aligned with my business direction? Is this something that I'm evaluated on? And if you call because you want to talk about their printing needs, they're not evaluated on printing needs. They're evaluated on, reducing overall costs or improving operational efficiency or getting maximum return for their marketing spend. And so you have to start using the words that they're evaluated on in your messaging. And that's not being mean. It's just being professional. And so that's the first thing that they ask. The second thing they said is they'll ask themselves, is this a priority right now? Is it urgent that I take action? And in many cases, because they are so frazzled, even if you are aligned with what they need, if it's not a priority right now, they may delete you just because they don't have the bandwidth to handle one more thing.
I know, too, that you also make a point of underscoring the idea of keeping things simple and straightforward. Can you say more about that and the value of that approach in a sales relationship?
Well, what's fascinating to me is that simple is emerging. There are two things that are really emerging as key differentiators now. Even though right now you have to be aligned and you have to be focused on priorities, you know, that is considered a baseline for customers. What they're really looking for right now, because they're so crazy busy, is they're looking for somebody who is an invaluable resource who can simplify their life. And at the very front end of the sales cycle, it may be just having a very simple, clear message that's understandable as opposed to babbling on and on. But once you start working with a customer, it changes, and it becomes the relationship becomes one where you can really actually serve as a guide to these people, because they don't make decisions on these in these areas very often that most of us sell. They make them when they have to, and so they're learners in terms of making a decision, and they don't want to make a bad one. So if we can simplify the decision process by showing them how to decide, by showing them how to do an ROI analysis, by showing them to get started with something simple, and by providing leadership along the way, we really make things easier for them. And they fall into our hands then and say, oh, thank God, she knows what she's doing. I can trust myself with her, and I can feel that she's looking out for my best interests.
So how did you come up with the title for this book? Does SNAP mean something? Is it an acronym? Or say a little bit more about that.
SNAP is an acronym, and initially started, though, in my mind with SNAP decisions. You know, how people, with SNAP decisions. So that's where it started. And I actually was going to talk about three things in the book. But everybody said to me, what does SNAP stand for? Like, they wanted it to be an acronym. I went, oh, I suppose it'd be good to have an acronym. So I actually took it, I renamed a couple of the things, and I added the core element that ran all the way through that I hadn't actually named. And that was simplicity, because I was talking about the need to simplify things for decision makers all the way through. So simplicity became the S. The N stands for being invaluable and the need to constantly be a trusted resource who brings educational content, who brings them insights, who provokes thinking and shares valuable information. That's the N. The A stands for aligned, which I've talked about already. You have to be aligned with their business objectives. And the P is you have to be focused on priorities, because if you're not, the momentum slows down. And so you have to keep raising the priority of what you're bringing to the table.
Well, it's obviously great timing for this kind of book, this kind of content, and I know that it's selling incredibly well. And I can tell you, since you can't see, our next guest is a former CEO of a number of financial services insurance organizations and a CEO of a corporate coaching firm, very successful one here in the Atlanta area. He's been writing copious notes the entire time you've been talking, so there must be some merit to what you say.
I think he's planning his talk right now. Oh. He could be taking copious notes on this.
Maybe you're right. Well, my question is, obviously the timing is good now. Economy's tough. You know, all of us that are out there selling and trying to put food on the table by selling, we need the guidance. We need the help. But the economy's going to come back. We know it will. When it turns around, does this have equal merit, or is this really more a book for these times?
This is certainly a book right now for when the economy is tough, because people are chartered to do too much, and people have, you know, organizations have laid off people and they're running lean and mean. But it's not just a book for these lean and mean times, because it's fundamentally, there's a fundamental shift in how buyers are reacting. Corporations are not going to staff up so that people have the luxury of, you know, working a 40-hour week and getting it all done at the end of 40 hours. I mean, the average person right now has 59 hours of work sitting on his or her desk right now that isn't done, and more just keeps being added to it. But what's happened is buyers have changed how they react to sellers, and that's not going to go back. That is not going to go away. You are either going to be a seller who brings value, or you're going to be a dinosaur. And there literally is no room in between. You know, if you don't add value, and if you don't bring them ideas and insights, and if you don't provoke their thinking, and if you don't show them how they can run their business better, they don't need to work with you. I mean, they can go online, and they will go online to research their problem, to look for solutions, to check everything out. They don't need a seller who's just simply wants to talk with them about the product. That's a waste of their time, and they will not let that go. So this is a change that is permanent. We will always need to be focused on, you know, keeping things simple, being aligned with their objectives, being an invaluable resource right now. Those are just things that will carry forward and will not go away when the economy comes back.
Jill, I wonder if you would take a second. I spent some time reviewing the website for the book, which is snapselling.com. And you have a couple of free downloadable resources on there that I had the chance to take a look at. They're phenomenal tools. This buyer's matrix, this value proposition generator, and a pamphlet called 9 Tips to Get Prospects to Call You Back. Great tools. I don't want to be sure our audience knows about those and gets those. You want to take a second and tell them a little bit about those tools?
Yes, what I did is I tried to package some tools that would really help people be better right now in terms of selling at this particular time. The Buyer's Matrix, by the way, is my favorite because it's the foundation, and it's something that I use in all my working sessions with my clients to help them really get immersed in the client experience and to make sure that they're constantly talking the client's language. It's a really invaluable tool. And the other thing that I see happening a lot is value proposition is a statement of the clear outcomes that you provide a customer. It's the language of business as opposed to the language of the salesperson. And so I tried to actually create a simple document that shows people how to create a value proposition that works, that they can use if they know their own product or service. And then the 9 tips to get people to call you back. That's just everything I know about how to get people to call you right now. You know, 9 things to, a couple of those things are things you can put right up by your desk, you know, tape them up right by your desk and keep them in front of yourself all the time to ensure that you are doing things the snappy way.
Well, I've downloaded thousands and thousands of documents and well, crap over the years. And I just, I was pleased. I was really, this material was so strong that that's why I wanted to be sure I brought up on the show and let our audience know about it. And they are free.
Snapselling.com.
Snapselling.com.
Well, that's good to know because I'm tired of towing the slab for high velocity. It's about time you sold something for us. So now you're equipped, right? No excuses.
That's right.
Did you find anything in writing this? I know you know this is not your first rodeo. You're obviously a very successful author, 3-time winner. Did anything surprise you in putting this last one together? What did you find the most fun about the experience this time around?
This was much harder to write than my first book. My first book was really a how-to, you know, boom, 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 you know, do this, 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 this. And it's kind of a walk-through guide to how to get your foot in the door. This one really required me to figure out a structure that I could show people. It was hard to create the framework for this book. I mean, that's what really surprised me. It was hard to explain what I have been thinking about for all these years in a way that made sense. And I really wrestled with it many times.
You're probably frazzled when you wrote it.
She was frazzled.
You're probably frazzled when you wrote it.
I was frazzled. Well, you know, the funny thing is I was frazzled, and to get your head around a new concept, because this is not what people are talking about. I mean, this is about how to sell to crazy busy people, and there's nothing out there around there. And so I wanted to create a framework that would make sense, and I couldn't create the framework without leaving my office and going away. And I actually had to put myself into a hotel for 3 days to get started because I was too crazy busy and I couldn't focus, which is the problem of the book, right? I couldn't focus. I couldn't move ahead when I was trying to do all my other stuff as well.
Well, that was a question I had. It was kind of a follow-up to what we talked about earlier with the frazzled customer syndrome. And I get there's a lot of scenarios that make up a frazzled customer. And one is that in a slower economy, they're asked to do more, and so they have more on their plate. How does the new media that's out there and how we're inundated with all this content that preoccupies our time and distracts us, how does that complicate this? Is that part of the frazzled mind?
It just adds to everything. I mean, I was just reading some research the other day which talked about how people read differently and their comprehension level is differently online, by the way, and it said that we have become scanners when we go online, and we just quickly scan everything right now, which means, by the way, that as sellers, if we know that things are being scanned, we really need to look at how to create scannable documents, scannable emails, scannable white papers, everything from that perspective. But it also talked about retention levels being down, and people don't retain as much when they scan because they're just running through everything right now. So there's so much out there, and people are scanning, and they're getting forgetful, and they don't even remember that you called before. You know, I mean, it's just their memory is overloaded. They can't take anything else in. So, which, by the way, is a good thing, too. You need to know, because if you've screwed up in making a call and done one of those nice calls, you can call back in 3 days, and they won't have any memory of you whatsoever.
Well, you know, let's do that before we close this interview out. Can you contrast the example that you shared with us earlier that was maybe a little too much sugar for a dime, as we say down my way, with a more productive, more practical approach?
Sure. I'll take that same example, and I'll make it snappy, okay?
Okay.
So that it hits on all four points that I talked about. I would call you up, and I would say, Stone, Jill Conrath calling. Say, I noticed in reading the recent business journal that one of your company's prime objectives in this coming year is to go up market with your sales force. I understand that's a real challenge when you're using technology-driven people to do this. I have some ideas that can help you shorten time to revenue and get up to speed faster. Let's set up a time to talk.
Wow.
It's dramatic.
What a contrast. That is dramatic contrast.
And audience.
Dramatic contrast. Yeah.
Just want to remind the audience again that nine tips to get prospects to call you back. That sheet walks you through how to create that.
So you can create it for your own business.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, right. Wow. That's terrific.
But you can see how different it is. And it's short. It's to the point. It's about their business objective. I sound like a peer. I've got some ideas. You know, I'm not hoping I can get on their schedule. I've got meat right now. Then they know that I'm a strong person, can bring value.
Well, I love it. Before we go, a couple more things. One, tell us a little bit more about your work in general behind the book, because as I understand it, you do workshops, education, consulting. Tell us a little bit more about your practice, if you will.
I really right now view my role as being a change agent, and because of that, I am really trying to do a lot of wake-up calls for salespeople and people who sell in general. Could be entrepreneurs or could be freelancers, professionals. So I do a lot of speaking, and people have national sales meetings, annual sales meeting, kickoff events, and they pull people together or just plain conferences. And I spend a lot of time at these events talking about the changes in the sales process, why things are changing, and what people need to do in order to be effective in the new world.
So maybe we could book you for the next High Velocity Radio Low Country Boil, huh?
Yeah, that sounds good.
You think
what are you serving?
Well, we'll have to look into that. I think you would come off really well with banjo music in the background. We'll see. Well, listen, we could talk.
Along.
We could visit with you all morning. I've had a great time just in this exchange and learning a lot. A couple things we'd like to do before we let you go. One, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest if they would to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us, Jill?
Yeah, it was funny because you told me you were going to ask me this, and you know, I started listing the mistakes that I've made. And believe me, the list is long. And the question one is, what is a profound mistake? You know, because I've made a lot of little mistakes, but big ones, those are harder. I became complacent at one point when I was running my consulting practice. And I was doing a different business back then, and I was working with people on new product launches as the bridge from marketing to sales and giving salespeople what they needed to shorten time to revenue. But I had a couple big clients, and they loved me to death, and I was in multiple divisions and business units of their organization, and life was rosy. And then one day, Wall Street spoke to both of my clients. I mean, within a very short period of time, Wall Street told both of my clients that they were not delivering the earnings that the shareholders wanted. And both of them stopped hiring me. I mean, it's like, even projects that I was midstream on were stopped midstream, and I had no backup. But the truth of the matter is, I had seen the warning signs. I knew they were there. I knew things were getting tough, and I just was kind of fat and happy and just let myself hang in there thinking that hopefully things would change, and they didn't. And it cost me big time. And it cost me big time in many ways. I mean, it certainly cost me because I had to rebuild my whole consulting practice, but it also, the complacency, I had not kept necessarily up to date on some of the things I would want to be up to date on in my profession. And when I came back, actually, I came back and I started selling to big companies, and I went out to start getting my own business back, and I couldn't get my foot in the door because things had changed so much.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what I'm talking about, this complacency thing. You know, you just kind of get on a roll and you live like life is fat and happy and things are good, and then whack. So what did I learn? I learned that you always have to stay vital and you always have to keep learning.
Well, I think that's marvelous advice, and you're very generous to share, you know, some of your challenges with our listeners, and I hope they'll take it to heart and apply it to their own lives. Every time you say fat and happy, I have this tendency to want to look over at our producer because he just, you know, he's rolling into money, and I worry about him. You know, I think he's getting complacent.
Well, listen, find out sooner or later.
Let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to visit with you and find your book and learn more about your work. Give us some contact info and some coordinates, if you would.
All right. First thing I'd suggest is the website snapselling.com, because that has everything there, right? Okay, so you can find the contact information there if you can't remember everything else. Jill Conrath at snapselling.com, Jill at sellingtobigcompanies.com. I mean, I've got 100 gazillion emails. which people can use. So it's Jill at anything, any of my websites. But they can also go to sellingtobigcompanies.com and look there too. Selling to Big Companies is my site that has a ton of resources on it already. Snap Selling is my site for the new book that showcases some of these sales acceleration tools that we talked about earlier.
And the book can be found on Amazon, where it's a bestseller, correct?
It can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, and the independent bookstores as well. And 800 CEO Read. I'm not supposed to show preference.
Or if you'll have your own radio show, you might get a free copy.
Hey.
Which you were very kind to send us a complimentary copy. Well, Jill, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again in the near future.
Hey, thank you so much, and I really appreciate you having me, guys.
You are more than welcome. Bye-bye now.
Bye.